chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken Petaluma, never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. Thanks for tuning in. Yes, the clock, if you've reset it, says it's 6 o'clock. Your body, and not only your body, but your animals know that it's not 6 o'clock. I know that it's not 6 o'clock. And if you haven't heard, there's a legislature. Lark, I know that you know that it's not 6 o'clock, so I want you to be quiet, little girl. Somebody in the California State Legislature is working on legislation. Let me pick up the puppy. Here she is. They don't do well with time changes. Anyway, it's going to be, I believe, on the ballot in November. And if it passes, it will make California the third state not to observe daylight savings time, otherwise known as, you know, something special to drive Michelle personally insane. I love spring mornings. I love this time of year. I would not be so unhappy about this if it was like it was, I don't know, 10 years ago or so, if anyone remembers. It used to begin in the middle of April and end in the middle of October. And one of the things about that is I got to have spring mornings. I love waking up with the sun. And there's nothing like just about this time of year when you do it, you're waking up and there's the natural light and it's still quiet. And one of the things I really love to do at this time of year is to go out in my car with my camera before the bustle of commuting and everything else happens and photograph spring flowers, especially the wisteria, the white wisteria that should be blooming soon. I just love this time of year before the day gets started. And daylight saving starting earlier under the guise of saving electricity, which it does not do. We actually use more fuel of all kinds during daylight savings. The other thing that it does on the back end, it doesn't end now until the first Sunday in November, which means it robs little kids of Halloween. It was so fun to go out after dark, you know, 5:15, 5:30, as soon as it was dark, you'd get to go trick-or-treating, your parents walking several paces behind you. And now, by the time it's dark, teenagers fill the streets. Nothing wrong with teenagers, but it's robbing the little kids of what was always my favorite holiday. End of rant. I promise. I promise not to do another one. All that was inspired by Mike saying that it was 7 o'clock. It's 6. And I know that what he was doing was he was thinking, oh, no one sets the clock. I have to move ahead an hour in my mind. But somebody actually did set the clock here properly. So, yep, it's just a few minutes after 6 o'clock, the end of a very, very rainy day, two rainy days. I hope you have enjoyed them. It's supposed to get a little more rain between now and tomorrow, and then I think by midweek it's going to be dry and in the 70s. One of the things I'm hoping that our guests might be able to tell me, I'm not sure, I don't want to put them on the spot, but, you know, we had that warm spell in February and a lot of fruit trees blossomed. Oh no, is this bad news like it was a couple years ago? Are we going to have trouble? But for now, let me introduce my guests. We're talking really about soil. There's an event coming up next Sunday. It is presented by Slow Food Russian River and taking place at a location I really love, Green String Farm at the corner of Freights Road and Adobe Road in Petaluma. Really great, great farm store, farm, home of happy, very happy chickens. Anna LaPay, author of Diet for a Hot Planet, following in her mother's footsteps, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet, will be the primary speaker. She will be in conversation with Diane Donlan of the Center for Food Safety and Sonoma County's own Michael Dimmock of Roots of Change. So we're going to talk about that event. We're also going to talk about the soil itself. And if I'm not mistaken, so can someone tell me, has the United Nations declared 2016 the year of the soil? Maybe Mike can look online. It seems like someone mentioned that to me. Anyway, on that note, my guest, Adam Davidoff of New Family Farm.
Yes.
Nice to see you. I have some nice pictures of you in my tomato book. I don't know if you've seen them yet. Very handsome man. We also have Sandy Mays of Russian River, Slow Food Russian River, and returning for at least the second time, maybe the third time, Caitlin Heckmeyer of Red H Farm. Thanks. Thanks for agreeing to be here, all of you. I know it was kind of last minute. Bless Paula Downing's heart, who set this up for me because I was writing furiously all week. So let's start with you, Sandy. Let's talk about the event itself.
Okay. Well, as you know, it's next Sunday, and the time is from 11 till 3. And what we're going to do is Anna's going to do the morning. She's kind of our keynote speaker. She's going to be doing the morning talk. And then we're going to take a break for lunch. And you can bring your own lunch, or we do have box lunches available online with brown paper tickets if you want to pick up a lunch there and make it a little easier. Then, and it's a beautiful farm, as Michelle says. There's picnic tables there to enjoy. And we're also going to do a short farm tour. And the farm store will be open for people to go in and browse.
Mm-hmm.
The afternoon, it's going to be Michael Dimmock in conversation with Diana Dolan.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to be a kind of a fluid thing with questions. And
really two different things.
Exactly.
And the farm store is fabulous.
Yeah.
They have the best eggs, and people are now limited to half a dozen per visit because they are so incredibly popular. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing because I would drive out there, and it's a schlep from Sebastopol to Green String Farm, and I would often not get any eggs. So now that they are limiting it, and they are so worth it. I actually gave it to a friend, gave a half dozen to a friend for his birthday, along with a recipe for shakshuka and the clay pots to cook shakshuka in. And I thought, oh, God, this is really like kind of a humble present. Said it was one of the best gifts he'd had in many, many years. So the other thing to know about Green String Farm, plan ahead if you're going to this event. Bring a cooler or something. They have some of the best grass-fed meat in that you can get anywhere. And it's ground beef is $5 a pound. You go to your regular market or the farmer's market, and you're going to pay between $10 and about $14 a pound. They also have these things go pretty quickly because I believe they harvest one animal a month and get everything, I mean a week. So if you want something like tongue or kidney or heart or that sort of thing, you have to call on a Tuesday and reserve it. Things arrive, I believe, on Friday. But if you want to stock up on some really extraordinarily flavorful and humanely raised beef, plan ahead, even call an order. It's a great place.
And I'd just like to add that there are tickets available. There will be tickets available at the door on Sunday.
And it's $15 for students and farmers, $25 for Slow Food members, $30 for non-members. Mm-hmm. And if you would like to reserve a box lunch, your choice is chicken or vegetarian. It is $12 with a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm trying to think. Frances Moore LaPay is
Anna's mother,
and she wrote.
They actually wrote the book together.
They were okay, yeah. And she wrote, of course, the extremely popular Diet for a Small Planet.
And decades ago.
And I always have to laugh when my ex-husband got together with the woman who would eventually become his wife. I gave her a copy of that book for Christmas because I wasn't upset that she, it was fine. Have him, make him happy. It's not a problem. And she doesn't like me, and she didn't speak to me for years. And one of the things I learned not that long ago is she was insulted by it because she thought it was a diet book and that I was calling her fat. So Diet for a Small Planet was a very prescient work talking about this overpopulated planet. And that idea of overpopulation doesn't really come up anywhere near as much as it should. And now we have, a planet that is heating up. Are we going to be growing, Pinot Noir in Alaska in another decade or two? It's kind of a scary thought. So we've invited our farmers tonight, Adam and Caitlin, to talk about the soil itself and the importance of soil. But first, I want to, how long have you been farming, Caitlin?
This is my sixth season.
And how about you, Adam?
This is my eighth season farming, seventh season in Sonoma County.
Okay. And I'm just wondering, and if the answer is no, that's fine. Have you noticed any changes in the soil and in farming itself that make you scratch your head and wonder if it has to do with climate change?
It's hard for me to say exactly, having only been farming here for seven years. And thinking cycles probably work on a longer time frame than that. But I'll tell you, I have noticed the frogs. And in the dry years, 2013, 2014, way, way, way less frogs.
Sure.
Our valley is lights up at night. I mean, I've been out there, I think in 2011, they were so loud I could barely have a conversation with someone standing across from me.
Yeah, I had the same at my house. Mm-hmm. You have to go inside to have a conversation.
And we've talked to old timers that say, in the 60s, driving around Sonoma County at night, all these places where now you don't hear any frogs, there was just frogs everywhere. Mm. So, if that has to do with groundwater or, the changes we're seeing in the county here, I think it does. But
now, where did you grow up?
I grew up on Lynch Road in Sebastopol, so just in South Sebastopol.
Okay, so you're from here. So you have...
I wasn't raised with what I would call a farmer's consciousness, though. There's sort of a certain sense and a discerning eye that you have when you start farming and watching the cycles and the seasons and the land really closely that I just didn't have as an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old growing up here.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would have been able to tell you about the frogs when I was 8.
Uh-huh. Okay, and Caitlin, you grew up on the land where you are now farming, right?
Yeah, not that far from Adam, actually.
Uh-huh.
So over in the Hessel area of South Sebastopol. And I think similarly to Adam, I couldn't say specifically that I see changes in the soil that I'm farming yet, but I think I can definitely say that I notice other changes that have an impact on that. I don't know if you would agree, Adam, but I feel like I used to count on, even when I first started farming, so even like 6 or 7 years ago, the morning fog in the summer, like the morning fog till 11 o'clock in the summer every day. And I just, the last few years, we just haven't seen that as much, which has a big impact. I do a lot of dry farming, and that has a big impact on, so that relates to the soil in that, as the soil has less and less moisture in it throughout the course of the season, you rely on that kind of fog and moisture in the air to help the plants out. And so that kind of imbalance has been kind of interesting to work with. And this year will be even more interesting considering, we're not coming out of a drought, but we're having this little blip of an El Nino, which is also, if this is my sixth season, at least the last five have been some kind of drought conditions.
Right.
So this is also kind of shaking things up a little bit.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I've been in the North Bay my whole life, not in Sonoma County. I didn't get to come over here. until I was in my very early 20s, and then I scooted over here as fast as I could. But I've always been connected to this area. And, I mean, really, it's just geopolitical boundaries that separate us throughout the Bay Area. I grew up on the Bay over in Vallejo. And I remember more fog. I don't remember as many heat waves as we have now. I remember that the heat waves were sort of, wow, this is weird. And my older half-sister would, when it got really hot, my older half-sister would go into the house and get a couple eggs and fry them on the manhole cover in the middle of our street just to demonstrate how hot it was. And they cooked, you know? They definitely cooked. But it didn't seem like what we have now, the really long, long periods of no rain. Though, if I know that if you go back in the deep soil tests, you see that, you know, there are changes that take place over a really long period of time, rather than the short cycles that humans can observe. But back to the soil, what about groundwater? I know some areas have a lot of groundwater. Where I live, there's a lot of groundwater. What about the two of you? And how does that impact farming?
I would say that I have a lot of groundwater on. I farm two different properties. One butts up against the laguna, so there's quite a lot of, it's quite a wet area. And then the other spot that I farm, which is the land I grew up on, kind of sits at the bottom of a slight valley. And mm-hmm. so it really collects a lot of water and holds a lot of water quite far into the season, which is really helpful because it reduces the amount of irrigation I need to do mm-hmm. and allows me to dry farm a lot. So right now there's a lot of water running right over the soil at this point because it's so saturated. But
yeah, there's a lot of water is just pouring off the little hill where I live and pouring down into Atascadero Creek, which I assume at this point is really flowing. Mm-hmm. Now, where are you located?
We're on Atascadero, small stem Atascadero as well. And I think you brought up a really good point with the surface water there, Katie. And that's, I think, really the missing piece moving forward is developing infrastructure to catch more. Obviously, we're not going to catch all of, but more of the water that's running off during these winters. Mm-hmm. And we haven't developed the infrastructures with the ponds and the using permaculture principles to make sure that more water is actually getting absorbed into the ground, flowing back into the water table underneath us. And, you know, we're able to do some of the same sorts of things that Katie does. We can dry farm tomatoes. We can dry farm potatoes. We can dry farm winter squash. I've heard stories of people doing crazy stuff and dry farming, you know, other root crops. But, you know, we're able to successfully and decently grow those crops without irrigation.
Do pest problems, do certain pest problems get worse during a drought?
Well, I think the heavy winter rains do something to decrease the rodent population, like the gopher population, for at least the beginning of the season.
Oh, okay.
So when you have drought years, you certainly don't get that. They're just thriving all the time.
Yeah.
Adam, what would you say about other pests? Is that?
Well, it depends on what practices you're using, really, and what you've got next to you. You know, in an early year, if you have a vineyard next to you and they've got mustard, then you've got a whole bunch of flea beetles jumping into your crops when they mow all of their mustard. We have
So flea beetles like mustard. They cut the mustard and they come over looking for your lettuce.
They
or whatever.
Things in the same family as mustard. So kales and and that and broccolis and cauliflowers.
Yeah,
all those sorts of things. But I would say that if you are stressing your crops in any way, whether it's fertility or water, you're more likely to have pests jump onto them. So if you're dry farming things, dry farming different crops. And they're stressed because they're having to go farther down,
right?
Or they're just not as healthy in general. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have more pest issues. Definitely, it is a consideration.
Mm-hmm. And then with the influx of water that we've had, are there then other problems that you're going to end up with because there's so much water?
Yeah, you can't get into your field today.
We were just talking about this before the show. We're all just
waiting
around
to get in the field. I was trying to remember. I think it was at the end. When I moved to my current location in Sebastopol, I think it was at the beginning of a 7-year drought. I think it was a 7-year drought. It was 1988, and it didn't really break until the end of December 94, New Year's 94. We had that big New Year's flood. And I'm trying to remember when I had the astonishing invasion of snails. I'm wondering if that comes after a drought breaks. That's sort of my memory. But I remember one year I had, I filled 3 or 4 5-gallon plastic tubs by just simply picking off snails. And I don't have this huge property at all. I won't tell you what happened to him. I'll tell you what happened to him. Put the lid up. I mean, put him in, you know, filled it with water, covered him up. And then I forgot about them. So we had, it made snail wine, I assume, but I just didn't open the lid. Lids for about 3 or 4 years, and then had someone pour it onto the garden for me. But is that something, do we see snails after a drought breaks or no?
I don't know that I would know the answer to that. Okay. I think snails, a lot of it has to do with habitat. Is there habitat for them or not? They'll creep in from anywhere. So, you know, if we're not weeding around our greenhouses or weed whipping or doing whatever we need to do to take away their habitat, there's going to be a lot. And I don't think I've seen any decrease in snails where I am the last, you know, in the drought years that we've had. It seemed the same, but it's a small sample size. So.
Yeah, I've seen very, very few snails. I had that horrible infestation. Maybe they sent out the word because I find a snail or two, but I have not had an infestation, knock on wood, in quite a long time. How about you?
I definitely still have a lot of snails and slugs. They do love moist, cool conditions. Mm-hmm. So I think certainly weather like this, you know, they're loving it. And hot and dry conditions and a drought may decrease their populations just by the nature of the climate that they like. But I would definitely not say they're not a problem, or they haven't been a problem over the last 5 years. But I also think that one of the, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows, one of the like biodynamic methods of pest control is to use the pests themselves to like blend them up and then spray them as a, so maybe that's why you're not having very many slugs.
There you go.
Because you just inadvertently did biodynamic.
I intuitively did it. I love it when that happens. Yeah, that smell, they wouldn't want to go there. Okay, I think that's a good note on which to take a little musical break here on Mouthful.
Yeah. lazy. So doggone lazy. So lazy.
Tonight's music brought to you by Southern Culture on the Skids. If you don't know them, check them out. They are so much fun. I actually saw them live in Santa Fe before I even knew who they were. I was visiting Deborah Madison and her husband Patrick, and he was doing a lot of sketching out in public. And Deborah was working on a book, and he said, "Oh, you go with me. Let's go. We're just going to go see this band I want to draw." And I was like, "Who are these people? They are so much fun." And his drawings of them were fabulous. Anyway, I love them. We'll hear a couple more songs. We're going to talk about soil. It was last year that was the year of the soil. And it was either that year or the year before that we saw Deborah Coons Garcia bring out her fabulous movie, Symphony of the Soil. And saw a lot of talk about the soil. So I want to talk now about, people say soil's important. So I want to get down into some of the details of that from a farmer's point of view. But before we do that, I was just reading something online yesterday or the day before. Showed just this beautiful topsoil, and the headline was, "Soil microbes contain antidepressants." And there was another article several years ago about how the microbes and other creatures, I guess you say, in soil are not bad for us. It's like you don't have to, you know, scrub your spinach with a brush and hang it on your clothesline to dry to get every last bit of soil out if it comes from good soil. So farmers, jump in. You jump in too if you want to, Sandy. What makes good soil?
First of all, I just say that soil is, as far as I understand, is an incredibly complex being that I'm just beginning to study and try to understand and try to work with. I'm just a steward, and I'm doing my best to, at the very least, leave it in as good of a state as when I came in, but ideally improve it. And there's a lot of talk about what it means to improve soil. It's a complex political issue too. But I do know a lot of what we're doing out there is not improving the soil. A lot of the practices that are employed by modern agriculture are destructive. That I feel really comfortable saying and putting out there.
Can you name some of those practices?
In general, tillage. Okay. Tillage is not a great...
That's what Evan's article was.
Tillage, which is rototilling.
Sure. There's a lot of different things you can drag through the soil to till.
And what does that do? And I know that you've either gone or are working towards going 100% no-till.
Yes. Well, I mean, one of the things that it does that's kind of most pertinent for this conversation is release carbon into the atmosphere.
Oh.
So tillage is over time bad from a farmer's perspective because it breaks down the soil structure, which is one of the most important things about soil. And Adam's totally right. It's so complex and soil systems are really different. They're really place-based. So I don't know that it's fair to say good soil looks exactly like this because...
There's lots of good soil.
Right,
we have so many
different kinds of soil. The kind of soil structure that you have for the kind of soil you have is really important to maintain, and tillage farming destroys that over time. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of novices would say, wait, you can't till, but my ground is so hard. How do I fix that? I think that's the first thing non-farmers and non-expert mm-hmm. gardeners think of when we talk about that. So could you explain that part?
Sure. First of all, I just put out there, we at New Family Farm use tillage, and we try to use tillage as intelligently, as responsibly as we can. There has been no, to my eye, and all other people might claim differently, system that's been put in place, this works, this is how you don't do tillage, and this is, we can totally replace tillage-based agriculture with no-till or non-tillage-based agriculture. There's a lot of trialing, testing models being put forward that's showing some of the possibility, but there's no quote-unquote end solution. So mm-hmm. for the people that are saying, I have hard ground, what do I do? In a lot of instances, tillage is still appropriate or the most commonly used method to work your soil.
Mm-hmm. Particularly as a way to get started. Uh-huh. So something interesting about no-till is that often the first thing you do to begin your no-till system is do one final till.
Okay.
So that, you know, clear. And you don't have to. You can do sheet mulching. But in a commercial setting, that is not necessarily time. Yeah.
And sheet mulching is when you put down several layers of paper and pile compost on top.
Yeah, paper, compost, cardboard
yeah.
old T-shirts. I think people use, you know, whatever kind of organic
matter. I did that. I've done that. Yeah. A lot, and somebody put the word out to all the raccoons. So whenever I do, you know, I did this whole huge area. It was so beautiful, and the raccoons tore it all up because it brings the grubs up to the surface.
Yeah. That makes sense.
A lot of the public discourse has been around no-till or reduced tillage in vegetable systems, and I've done a little poking around recently and seen that less than 4% of the cropped land in the United States is in vegetable systems. The large majority of the croppable land is in corn, soybeans, and hay. There's other field crops, hay, oats, mm-hmm. other things like that, that are considered field crops that make up that category as well. And I think a lot of the innovation, research, and real results are going to be seen in those large-scale systems.
Mm-hmm.
There is a particular tool that's being trialed, used on a, I'm not exactly sure the scale, but it's called a roller crimper. And this is a piece of equipment that allows you to work on a big scale and do reduced or no tillage in them. Unfortunately, right now, there's a lot of herbicide use that goes along with the roller crimper. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of one of the challenges, because when you're not doing tillage, there's no way to work work the weeds that are popping up in. And that's where the herbicide use comes in. But I think it's important to get out of the dialogue of only talking about the vegetable systems, because it's really such a small part of American agriculture and such a small part of the actual acreage mm-hmm. that when we're talking about conservation practices.
Mm-hmm.
And a great place, I think, to find more research on that is at like the Rodale Institute.
Exactly.
And I think they're doing a lot of industrial scale research using roller crimpers and seed drills.
Mm-hmm. Could you make me see a roller crimper?
So a roller crimper, imagine a big roller, like something that flattens pavement.
Okay. Yeah.
Something like that with spikes on it. That's if you get in there with the right moisture in the crop that's standing in the field, actually cuts it off on the base and lays it down. So it's cutting it off, laying it down, and then
cutting out what's growing there.
Yes.
Okay.
So before you're going to seed your commercial crop.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. And then that's mulching the soil. So you're able to conserve soil moisture. And you can seed your crop right underneath that quote-unquote mulch that's just been laid
down. Oh, okay, so green mulch.
And one of the most important things about those systems is that in places where we see industrial agriculture with commodity crops like corn and soy is in the Midwest, where they get a lot of summer rains. And so, mm-hmm. you know, or year-round rains. And so when those methods are not used, when instead tillage is used and then rainstorms come in, that's when you see massive runoff and loss of soil. So this system keeps the root structures in place of the crops that are roller crimpered, and that's able to hold the soil, and the mulch layer is able to hold the soil in place mm-hmm. when the rains come, but before the newly seeded crop is able to, you know, kind of take over the field and act as the like structural backbone.
Mm-hmm. How important are worms?
Hugely important.
Yes.
Yeah, farmers want to look in the soil, and you want to be able to reach down in the first handful. You want to get three worms in it.
Uh-huh.
Or I do.
For sure.
Yeah.
Den worms.
Yeah, and they are digesting.
Yes, and fertilizing.
And fertilizing.
and
it goes in, it comes out.
Creating pathways.
And then gophers too. I don't know about here, and we all wince. But I did see. I finally saw a purpose for gophers, and I was really astonished because it just seems like they don't fit. They're just here to annoy us. But Mount St. Helens, the first things that grew on Mount St. Helens after that amazing eruption in the 80s grew because of gophers. Gophers churned up the soil, seeds fell through the ash, and things began to grow. And it was the gophers that aerated that soil so that it could start to regenerate. I thought that was real. It's like, okay, why don't y'all pack up and go to Mount St. Helens? Because it's not helping
out
here.
In the wildlands.
But I thought that was interesting. And it's like, certainly everything, whether it annoys us or not, certainly everything has its place in when there's a balance. We agree on that?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's take one more musical break here on Mouthful. We'll be right back.
If your dick is big or your dick is tiny, it don't matter if your wig's all straight, if you show up early and you party too late.
Soul City, Southern Culture on the Skids here on Mouthful. We are talking with Sandy Mays, Caitlin Hackmeyer, and Adam Davidoff about, the reason for the show is about the upcoming, it's all about the soil, a day discussing that all important thing, farming on a hot planet, with speaker Anna LaPay, author of Diet for a Hot Planet, and then also Diana Donlan of Center for Food Safety and Michael Dimmock of Roots for Change. It's taking place next Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Greenstring Farms. The exact address is 3571 Old Adobe Road in Petaluma. Prices range from $15 from students to farmers, for students and farmers, $25 for slow food members, $30 for non-members, and if you want a box lunch, that is $12. And, you know, if you go, bring some extra money to, or at least a credit card, to shop at the really wonderful farm store. It's probably the biggest farm store in Sonoma County. I can't think of one that's bigger.
I can't either. Yeah, it also has the most diversity.
No, yeah, the most diversity yeah. And remarkable prices. Mm. Really remarkable. You won't find produce at these prices or grass-fed meats at these prices. They also have some of Vela cheeses and Vela butter. They have olive oil and vinegar. They have preserves made from farm products. They have those half dozen eggs you can get, flour, grains, plant starts. They have plant starts, including trees, depending on the time of year. So you could make a day of it. It's a really great place. And it's being brought, being presented, brought to us by Slow Food Russian River. And that's where you get tickets, right? You go to the slowfoodrr.org. Is that right?
Or brown paper tickets.
Or brown paper tickets.
We posted it on there.
Okay. So sometimes the easiest way to get to brown paper tickets is to go to the website of whatever, Slow Food, for example, mm-hmm. and click through, because I'd have to tell you lots and lots and lots of numbers to give you the actual brown paper tickets link. And you'd probably write one of them down down incorrectly, like I always do. So go to slowfoodrr.org and then click through. Anyone here read Diet for a Hot Planet yet?
No, I was just briefly reviewing it today, actually, before I got here.
Tell us some of the highlights.
Well, I found it interesting and that she speaks of 7 principles of a healthy diet, and they're all things that are pretty manageable, I think, for individuals and families to do. The first one's reach for real foods.
Always.
Simple. Put plants on your plates. Simple. Don't panic. Go organic. Lean towards local, and that's to help cut the transport-related emissions. Finish your peas, and that means look for ways to reduce waste. Food waste is huge problem. Send packaging packing, buying bulk, taking your own containers. And the last one is get yourself back to the kitchen, which I think is
all
simple and fun.
All very easy things. And let's talk about that second to the last one, because I think people, especially if we're starting to talk about soil and hot planet, some people really do tune out because they get overwhelmed and they think, oh, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. But one of the really simple things you can do is fix yourself a bag of containers. It could even be you could go in with a friend and or friends and buy a package of Chinese takeout containers, which are the compostable ones that are the ones that can easily be recycled that are made out of cardboard. So you get a cloth bag. You put some of those containers in. You put knife, fork, and spoon that can be reused. You put in a bowl. You put in a plate. You put in something, a glass, a cup, something that you can drink out of. And then if you have something to eat at the farmer's market, take your own things. Speaking with, I'm not going to think of her name right now, and I'm really sorry, at the Occidental Bohemian Farmer's Market. She said the biggest single...
Kim,
thank you, Kim. Mm-hmm. It was right there in front of me. She said the single biggest source of waste is people who eat on the spot. And they have some fabulous prepared food vendors at that market. But they've been encouraging people to bring their own containers and not just, a plate or something that you're going to eat on while you're there. But if you want to get something to go, take your own things. And that's something you can make up a kit. You can make up 2 or 3. You can keep them in the trunk of your car. I had a friend long ago who did this for camping. Mm-hmm. She had this old Volvo, and she had this old, wooden fruit packing box. And she had everything she needed to build a campfire and cook on her campfire, make coffee, everything. And I think she had a sleeping bag and pillow in there. And she could just stop wherever she wanted and camp, and it's the same sort of thing. I'm actually thinking about making several, maybe as gifts. But that's a real easy way, and you can even do that shopping in stores. You can just say, I want to use my own containers, not your plastic one, and nobody's going to complain about that. And so why don't you read just a tiny bit more slowly those, because they're really sensible, they're not overwhelming.
Exactly. The number one is reach for real foods. Not packaged foods.
Fast foods, fake foods, yeah. Foods that, have pink slime in them.
Things that you don't know. If you can't pronounce it, you shouldn't be eating it. Number two is put plants on your plates. 3 is don't panic, go organic. 4 is lean towards local. which is a big movement here. Five is finish your peas, looking for ways to reduce waste. And that, you know, that's a big topic right now, too, that we're actually sponsoring the film at the Spastable Documentary Festival Sunday. And our film is Waste Cooking, Make Food, Not Waste. A little plug for our film Sunday.
Yeah, I was torn between wanting to have them on and wanting to focus on this. So, yeah, the Documentary Film Festival in Sebastopol is really a great festival.
And then number six is send packing, like we just talked about. And just carrying your water bottle just for one simple thing, you know, not using plastic water bottles. We're going to have water available on Sunday, and we're asking people to bring their water bottles. Mm-hmm. I won't be selling water bottles. Mm-hmm. And then number seven, get yourself back to the kitchen. Learn to grow, cook, and create your own meals.
And it's just, you know, I always say that cooking is better than a martini. You can have a martini, too. I'm not telling anyone not to drink.
While you're cooking.
Exactly. But when it comes to relaxation, nothing beats standing and stirring risotto. And you're just enveloped in all of those wonderful aromas. I hate having a bunch of packages to recycle. In fact, for me, I buy very few things ever in packages. Packaged. Sometimes someone living with me might do that. But, you know, my 14-year-old grandson and my daughter live with me right now. And, you know, grandson's a hard sell on some of that stuff. But you can cut down. And cooking, things are so much better, and it's just so pleasant. And people say they're so busy. And I can't really understand quite what that means. Mm-hmm. We're spending, like, we have so much time that we have to give to Facebook. We have so much time we have to give to Twitter. Is that why we're so busy? I mean, cooking.
I recently saw a statistic that people spend like an hour and a half a day online dating.
Wow.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That's so scary.
On average.
That's really...
I know. We can't cook our own meals, but...
We can sit...
Browse through other people for an hour and a half a day.
You know, if you cook dinner, you come home from work or walk down the hall if you work at home. You just come home. You relax a little bit. Maybe you check your email. You think about what you're having for dinner. You pull it out of your well-stocked pantry. Having a well-stocked pantry...
And keep it simple. You're not overwhelmed.
The best foods... I mean, I really think the best foods are usually the simplest.
Mm-hmm. And the healthiest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They taste, you know, they taste, I don't like things.
Then people won't
all
get
munged
overwhelmed
up.
That they can't pick, you know.
Soup. I think we eat soup 4 or 5 days a week.
I could.
And
soup,
lunches too.
Yeah. Right now I'm eating soup soup that I've made every single day. Sometimes I eat 2 or 3 different soups.
Mm-hmm. I'm into beans lately.
beans
soups. And greens and beans, yeah.
Bean soups are just absolutely wonderful. I'm getting ready to make a potato soup. Mm-hmm. I love mm-hmm. potato soups, mm-hmm. and I often will use a potato soup as a base mm-hmm. for whatever greens I happen to have. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a potato soup, and then, God, it's a glorious year in the garden for parsley, mm-hmm. at least in my garden. The parsley is just magnificent. So I'll grab a big handful of Italian parsley, and then if I have baked greens or sorrel, I have a lot of sorrel. It loves the rain. The putting parsley into the greens will keep it from turning gray. Mm. And then you saute up the greens really quickly. You put them into the potato soup. You leave it chunky. You puree it with an immersion blender if you want. It's ready in half an hour.
Mm-hmm. And it'll last. Patty's Day is coming up.
That's right. It'll last 2 or 3 days, uh-huh. depending on how big your family is. So cooking is just, you know, you cook, you clean, you eat, you clean up.
I love it.
And then it's time to relax and turn in for the night. And life just seems to take care of itself in that way.
What about dessert?
You know, dessert is, well, dessert
some people like
for
it in
me,
the morning.
My favorite dessert is to pass around whatever fruit is in season. Mm-hmm. A big bowl of tangerines, or in a few weeks, mm-hmm. a big basket of strawberries and then plums. I mean, fresh fruit is, to me, just the best dessert in the world.
We did a ton of frozen peaches this year. I think maybe probably 10 of those big Ziploc bags mm-hmm. full of them. Next year I want to do double mm-hmm. that. But I just take a little bowl, and then you let them defrost for 10 minutes, and then you have these half-melted peaches, and I would just...
Oh, that sounds great.
I was getting in trouble for eating all of them.
Well, that's a great... freezing things. I have a freezer full right now of persimmons. Mm. As I had too many and couldn't deal with them all. So especially if this cool weather continues, I'm going to make some things out of persimmons because persimmons are just great. Mm. Do either of you, Kayla? Do you guys have eggs? Either of you have eggs?
No.
Not for sale. Mm-mm.
Okay.
We have some chickens on the farm, but they're mostly for home consumption.
Uh-huh. What kind of chickens do you have?
They are, you know what, I actually don't know. Okay. They were gifted to my parents, then they proceeded to multiply in all sorts of intricate ways.
That's great. So there was a rooster among them.
Yeah. Well, at one point there were about 9 roosters among them. Now there's only one.
9 roosters, there might have been some pretty dramatic fighting going on.
It was raucous.
Yeah.
It was raucous.
I have a rooster living next door to me now. And it's okay. He doesn't get too noisy, but I figure, well, maybe we're going to have chicks sometime soon too. But I love the idea of keeping chickens, and I'm actually considering it. I've got somebody living at my house now, and we can, you know, I've always felt I needed to be 2 people to do chickens.
Yeah, because you have to be there. Yeah.
Not just that, but I don't have good carpentry skills.
No.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that side, mm-hmm. I'm a writer, you know, I'm inside doing my writing, and to do the things required to create a home for chickens and then maintain that home. I mean, I'll clean it, I'll feed mm-hmm. them, I'll take care of things, but I can't do the construction. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not the right person to go out and deal with things if a fox breaks in.
It can be traumatizing.
Yes, it's, you know,
I'm safe. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why building a really good chicken coop is so important. But we have a lot of raccoons where I live. Mm-hmm. We have raccoons, skunks, foxes, coyotes.
Not a fox this year.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fine. They need to eat. Mm-hmm. They need to eat. But I'm not going to grow chickens for them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just, call me selfish. I'm not going to grow chickens for them. If I have chickens, I want them to give me eggs. And I've just discovered and written about, well, not just, but pullet eggs.
Hmm.
Pullet eggs? Somebody who's at the Green Star Farm, which sells at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Green Star Farm and not New Family Farm, because that's you.
Armstrong?
Singing Frog.
Okay.
Singing Frog's Farm. Mm-hmm. They have had pullet eggs at the Sebastopol Farmers Market lately, and I'm pretty sure that there are vendors at the Santa Rosa Original Market with mm-hmm. pullet eggs. And I read something utterly ridiculous about pullet eggs. That pullet eggs are the eggs of young chickens who haven't yet learned how to lay. And it's like, they don't go to laying school. You know, no one teaches a hen to lay an egg. It's natural. You can't stop a hen from laying an egg. Once a hen matures, she is going to lay an egg every 24 to 28 hours, you know, and as long as she's well-fed and happy until the end of her life. And I know people have had chickens 12 and 13 years, and they're still getting a few eggs a week. But pullets are young chickens who haven't fully matured. Mm-hmm. And when they first begin to lay, those eggs are so delicious. Mm-hmm. They're smaller, but they have a greater percentage of yolk to white, so mm-hmm. they're richer. They make just this deep, beautiful, rich omelet or scrambled eggs. They are so good. In fact, that's what I had for lunch today. I had some congee just made from, I made a huge batch of chicken stock this week, and then I made congee and just poached a pullet egg and put it on top of the congee. Mm-hmm. And there you go. Didn't take very long. It was delicious.
So
anyway, pullet eggs.
Young chickens.
They're young chickens.
Oh,
yeah.
For some reason, I thought they were young turkeys.
Yeah, they're a pullet is a young chicken before it's fully mature. I think they'll start laying their first eggs. Maybe you'll start to get some maybe at 6 or 7 months, but they're not mature yet. Mm. And for the first several weeks of laying, they're given those beautiful little.
So it's a seasonal thing. Buy the pullets eggs.
It's a generational thing.
Yes, it's a generational thing.
So it's not so much seasonal.
So if people, there's a lot right now because people are raising, you know, chicks right now, and so there will be some. But people do get chicks to replenish their flocks throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And now that I think that they've seen there's a real market for pullet eggs, and I, because lately, if I didn't get to the market in time, you know, all the pullet eggs were sold out. Mm-hmm. So people have definitely discovered them. Mm-hmm. Adam, New Family Farm, what markets do you attend?
We attend the Sebastopol Farmers Market, the Occidental Farmers Market, and we're going to be starting this summer at the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Exciting.
Good for you.
Are you going to drive there, or are you going to go on the...
I'm not going to drive there. Someone else will be driving there.
Okay. Yeah. It's a great place to take the ferry to, but I guess you couldn't take all your stuff with you.
That would be fun, though.
Yeah, it would. And Caitlin, you're at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. You have a small CSA.
We're actually not running the CSA this year.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're at the Sebastopol Farmers Market, and I work a lot with Woodfor Brewing Company
as well.
Yeah.
Okay, they're in Sebastopol. They make a nice sour beer. You're not doing a CSA, are you?
No, we're not. Although I flirt with that idea regularly. Uh-huh. There's a whole bunch of different models out there and things to choose from.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We just haven't been able to set it up or wanted to set it up quite yet. Mm-hmm. But look for it.
Okay, great. And on that note, another hour has flown by. The event, it's all about the soil. Farming on a Hot Planet next Sunday, March 20th, 11 to 3 p.m. Go to slowfoodrr.org and click through to buy your tickets. And if you leave at 3 o'clock, you will be home in time to hear next week's episode of Mouthful. I promise you a great ride. It is Crescent Dragon Wagon. She's amazing, and she is going to be teaching a class online throughout the month of April, and she's set up a special discount for Mouthful listeners. So tune in next week, and take care of yourself, take care of someone else, and have a wonderful week.
Grapes are covering the grassland, they're buying up for family farms, selling out.